From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Pulling out all the stops, it's a last-ditch effort to stall the prison privatization effort in the Florida Senate.
You know and I know the fastest way to lose control of something up here is to get a study commission to take a look at it. We will get the 7%. The study will not guarantee that, but signing this agreement and voting this bill out of here will today.
To sue or not to sue, lawyers speak out against a bill to limit medical malpractice claims.
Let's face it, you're there for medical care. You're not going to stand up and refuse to sign something that the doctor gives you, and very few people read it.
A proposal that would revamp how new power plants are paid for becomes a big bargaining chip. And lawmakers say there could be oil just waiting to be discovered under the state's public lands. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. A move to stop a prison privatization plan from moving forward failed to pass out of the Senate today. As Sasha Cordner reports, this comes ahead of tomorrow's vote on the massive effort, where both sides of the issue have been making a last-ditch effort to plead their case.
Ahead of Tuesday's vote, both sides have been roaming the Florida Capitol trying to garner support for either side. Among them are the correction officers, who will be the most affected by privatizing the 27 correctional facilities in South Florida.
We're going to our supporters and thanking them for support. We're also going to the ones that don't support us. A few of the senators have been that are against us have been at least cordial and take meetings with us, and a few of them, of course, have just been kind of anything that can get us out of the office.
Brett Pruitt is one of 50 correctional officers who went door-to-door to lawmakers in the Senate. Dale Landry, a member of the NAACP, also has been talking to senators about his opposition to the proposal. He says recent moves by proponents show that it's prison management companies like GEO Group and Corrections Corporation of America that are really pulling the strings.
We have seen the first result with the removal of Senator Fasano for calling for an independent study. We have seen Senator Haldopoulos stall Senate action on the bill for fear it would be defeated. One can only presume to give time for the masters to entice those on the precipice of giving in to money at the sake of Floridians.
But Brad Swanson with the Florida Chamber of Commerce says that's not true.
The private sector has had an established record of being able to do the exact same job at a lower cost for the citizens of Florida. And frankly, as the budget is as tight as it is, you know, the savings in the neighborhood of $20 million, you know, can fund other much-needed resources in the state, like 300 teachers.
However, on the Senate floor, there was a lot of debate about the cost savings, like what it actually is and what it will do. That's what Senator Mike Fasano hoped to address with an amendment.
My amendment simply requires an analysis be done by an expert group of people that would come back with some of the many answers to the questions that Senator Bullock asked, Senator Dockery asked, Senator Latvala, I mean others, in fact. There has not been a clear answer as to what's the bottom line as far as how this is going to impact communities, how it's going to affect taxpayers.
But the debate got heated as Senator John Thrasher argued that if Fasano's amendment passed, that would mean there would be three options available to them.
We can let the governor do it. I like the governor. He's a good friend. But I'd rather see, if we're going to do it, I'd rather see this legislature do it. Or we can just say no and let's don't do it and let the courts over there, a single circuit judge, make this decision for us. That's wrong.
Republican Senator Paula Dockery pointed to research that showed the state can run things cheaper than private prisons, based on figures from the Florida Department of Corrections. She says she doesn't understand why Senate leadership would not want to get their own analysis done.
When I brought up earlier the fact that the seven prisons we have, we paid more than what was in that contract, and they're not saving more money than what some of our own state-run prisons are able to do the service for, all you have to go on is our past history. And our past history is not a compelling case to go forward with privatizing half of the prisons in the state of Florida.
Senator Mike Bennett, speaking for the opposition, pleaded to lawmakers not to approve an independent study.
You know and I know the fastest way to lose control of something up here is to get a study commission to take a look at it. We will get the 7%, and we will all be proud of it. Let's save the money that we can right now. Let's save it today. Let's protect our seniors. Let's protect our health reg. Let's protect the people who need it the most. Let's be guaranteed the 7% savings, or this whole conversation is moot. The study will not guarantee that. But signing this agreement and voting this bill out of here will today.
Senator Fasano's amendment failed to pass on a close vote of 19-21. An up or down vote on Senate Bill 2038 is expected to be taken on Tuesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
A bill that would have granted sovereign immunity to emergency room doctors is changing as it moves through the legislature. Lynn Hatter reports a House panel has approved a series of amendments that supporters say would bring down the cost of health care. But the move has opponents arguing it would limit a patient's right to sue for medical malpractice.
A proposal by State Republican Representative Matt Gaetz would have expanded state liability caps to emergency room doctors, but it also would have cost Florida taxpayers about $90 million. In a tight budget year, some lawmakers balked at the cost, so the bill has been rewritten to allow doctors to go through arbitration. The new language would let doctors create agreements that opponents like the Florida Justice Association's Ken Sobel says would limit a patient's ability to sue for medical malpractice.
Imagine a patient who comes into a doctor's office and they're presented with a document to sign, as we all are whenever we go to the doctor's office, and you sign pretty much anything that the doctor gives you. Let's face it, you're there for medical care. You're not going to stand up and refuse to sign something that the doctor gives you, and very few people read it. So the patient's going to sign this arbitration agreement, and they're not going to find out what they signed until it's too late.
Under the rewritten version of House Bill 385, if a patient were to sue a doctor, the doctor would be allowed to have his or her attorney present, something that doesn't happen now. Doctors could also refuse to speak with a patient's attorney, and a patient would have to prove with clear and convincing evidence that a doctor didn't perform what's called a supplemental test. In other words, that they failed to follow up on healthcare problems or didn't perform their jobs properly. Republican Representative Fred Costello, an Ormond Beach dentist, says the changes are necessary to level the playing field.
It was mentioned that, oh my gosh, we would be held to the same criminal standard, that clear and convincing is the standard used in criminal court now, and we shouldn't use that here. If somebody's suing me for malpractice, you better believe it's criminal, in my opinion, so I would hope that we would use the same standard, the clear and convincing.
The bill is a result of two things: heavy lobbying by physician and hospital groups and a desire to bring down health care costs. The bill's supporters point to doctors practicing what's called defensive medicine, doing unnecessary tests or procedures out of fear of lawsuits. However, the overall impact of defensive medicine is hard to measure, and the most recent estimates from the U.S. Congressional Budget Office shows changes in liability laws would save less than 0.5% a year on health care costs. The Florida Justice Association estimates medical malpractice lawsuits contribute only 0.6% to the total cost of health care increases in the state. Meanwhile, hospital groups and the bill's sponsor, Republican Representative Matt Gaetz, argue the measure doesn't let bad doctors off the hook for malpractice, nor does it limit a patient's right to sue.
And so why not let both sides have equal access to ensure that we get the best outcomes, the most efficient outcomes? We have to make sure that every dollar we spend in the healthcare context is driven to efficient and effective patient care. Because the more patients that we can treat with the dollars that we allocate and the dollars they have, the more people are going to be able to live healthy lives. And that's what this bill does by removing defensive medicine and ensuring that every dollar is directed to efficient care.
Gaetz's proposal cleared the House Governmental Appropriations Committee on a party-line vote with Democrats in opposition. It has one more committee stop. A companion bill by Senator John Thrasher is in its second-to-last committee stop in the Senate. The proposals are the latest efforts on medical tort reform, following a 2003 overhaul that drastically cut the number of medical malpractice lawsuits filed. Last year, there were only 960 such cases, with a third resulting in a judgment against the physician. In the same time frame, more than 8 million people visited Florida's emergency rooms, putting the chance for a doctor to be sued at less than 1%. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a Senate energy bill moves forward without a utility-backed amendment that would change how new power plants are paid for.
And something of this significance that could have a far-reaching impact for years to come. I thought it was just best to slow down and let's give everybody an opportunity to talk about it.
Lawmakers are considering a bill that would incentivize private companies to look for oil on state lands so the state doesn't have to pay for it.
The state doesn't have money to do exploration of oil and gas. because it's very expensive.
And last year, many Florida lawmakers were hot to ban red light cameras. This year, not so much.
The main part of it is it standardizes the yellow lights at these red light camera intersections to make sure that we have uniformity across the state.
A proposal to revamp the state's energy policy passed out of the Senate Agricultural Committee today and is one stop away from the Senate floor. James Call reports the proposal is moving forward without a failed amendment that would have implemented a major change in the way customers pay for new power plants.
An energy bill failed each of the past three sessions because opponents and supporters say they were too heavy. That is, they try to do too much. This year's bill, which includes tax incentives for renewable energy sources, is based on recommendations by Agricultural Commissioner Adam Putnam. Policymakers are very sensitive to cost factors to consumers, as illustrated by Staff Director Matt Carter when he began his briefing on the bill for the Senate Energy Committee 2 weeks ago.
The overarching premise in this bill is no rate increase for ratepayers. No rate increase for ratepayers. I hope you guys heard me on that one. No rate increase for ratepayers.
They did. The bill passed the committee unanimously. Some committee members specifically mentioned no rate increase was a selling point for them. Winter Park's Andy Gardner is sponsoring the measure. He concedes it is a modest proposal, but adds it can have a significant impact.
Here's the amendment we did. We actually added...
Outside a Senate Ag Committee meeting, Gardner explains the bill tries to give a boost to the renewable energy industry and biofuels in particular. More than 50% of Florida's electricity is produced by natural gas, a circumstance that is like putting too many of your eggs in one basket. Florida has been trying to diversify its energy supply for at least 5 years.
Additional, you know, ethanol has always been the focus, and what we put in here, or other alternative fuels. So we put in some different options besides just the corn piece. So I would think from an ag standpoint, that would be pretty good.
Biofuels and Florida's ability to produce them was not the main point of discussion of the Ag Committee's review of Gardner's energy bill. An amendment offered by Tallahassee Senator Bill Montford was it would have allowed utilities to increase base rates when new or upgraded power plants start operating. Currently, those costs are passed on after a hearing before the Florida Public Service Commission. Florida Power and Light lobbyist Mike Soule says such hearings are redundant because the plans for a new plan is reviewed by the government each step of construction.
This is purely streamlining. We've done one thing to change. We built a power plant that everyone approved. And in this case, we're saying if it comes in under budget, let's talk about this power plant. Let's have the proceeding with the PSC on this power plant. That saves significant taxpayers' money, and it saves significant customer money.
Consumer groups see it differently. John Moyle is with the Florida Industrial Power Users Group. He says focusing on just the power plant and not the company operating it would be a significant change in state policy and would limit the PSC's ability to consider all costs and benefit factors.
And we see the amendment as, in effect, a one-way street to a rate increase, because it limits, in effect, what the PSC can do to looking at the cost of the power plant and does not take a holistic view as to what's going on with the company. And we think that's not the right way to approach things. It's inconsistent, we believe, with the regulatory compact.
Montford filed the amendment Friday and then spent the weekend fielding phone calls and listening to people. He pulled the amendment but will not declare it dead. He says he wants to give people time to think and talk about it.
This is a very complicated issue. It's one that could have a financial impact on businesses and, most importantly, families. And again, I just thought it was too quick notice from my part, then to move forward. Mm-hmm. And something of this significance that could have a far-reaching impact for years to come, I thought it was just best to slow down and let's give everybody an opportunity to talk about it.
The energy bill now heads to the Senate Budget Committee without an amendment that could have led to higher electrical rates for consumers, which was a possibility that helped doom an energy bill each of the past 3 years. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. Lawmakers are looking into a measure that could help the state partner up with private companies to explore and drill for oil or natural gas on state lands. Regan McCarthy reports some say the state has plenty of oil, it just doesn't have the money to look for it.
Senator Greg Evers says there could be oil just waiting to be discovered under Florida's forests and public lands, but he says the state needs just a little help finding it.
The state doesn't have money to do exploration of oil and gas because it's very expensive.
Evers, a Republican from Crestview, is bringing forward legislation that would let the state partner up with a private company to search for oil, and then if oil is found, would give the rights to develop the oil to that company. It's a measure supported by groups like the Florida Petroleum Council. Petroleum Council Director David Micah says the change wouldn't significantly differ from Florida's current law.
This enhances the possibility of a company who is investing that private capital in the geophysical part to enter into a partnership with the state to go forward.
Right now, companies that find oil don't necessarily get to develop it. Instead, once oil is found, the state's required to have an open bid process, meaning a competitor could swoop in and take land right out from under a company that found the oil, leaving businesses with little incentive to invest in the cost of exploring. And Evers says that's a problem for the state.
The state has acquired the mineral rights from the federal government for the land included in Blackwater State Forest and currently owns other acreage that might also have oil and gas resources which have not been found or developed. The state does not have the financial resources to explore these properties for these resources.
But some, like Senator Thad Altman, a Republican from Melbourne, are raising concerns about what the measure's potential environmental impact might be.
Invariably, there will be impacts on to the public lands, whether it's seismic testing, which could have impacts on wildlife, the construction of roads, the actual footprint of the well, and it may be minimal. In some cases, it could be a little more intrusive in others.
Altman says since that's the case, he suggests redirecting part of the revenue to the public lands. He says if it's done right, it could even improve the properties. But Evers says, as the bill stands now, that would be a decision made by the cabinet during the negotiation period between the state and the private company before the exploration begins. Meanwhile, Senator Evelyn Lynn, a Republican from Daytona Beach, says she's worried about the impact this type of exploration might have on recreational lands.
So that it won't impose on, you know, a child's playground, and here's, you've got a big gas, a pipe and a drill with, you know, gas and oil lines going down. The kids would love that.
Lynn also named spaces like campgrounds as state recreational lands that she says ought to be off limits. Lynn proposed a last-minute amendment to that effect, but withdrew it after Evers promised to work with her to get similar language written into the bill before it hits its next committee stop in the Senate Environmental Preservation and Conservation Committee. Evers says the bill as it stands now would only allow explorations where they're already allowed under current law.
The lands that it would entail right now would just be state lands, state-owned property that the state already has the management plan that allows for oil and gas exploration. So we're not changing anything.
The measure passed out of its first committee stop, the Senate Communications and Public Utilities Committee, with a 10-4 vote. A similar measure is moving through the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
In some other news around the Capitol, the Florida Supreme Court will hear oral arguments on a redistricting plan for the State House and Senate later this month. The justices will have 10 days after the February 29th hearing to make a decision. The Republican-controlled legislature finalized the maps last Thursday. The next day, Attorney General Pam Bondi asked the justices to review the plan as required by the Florida Constitution. That began a 30-day period for the High Court to complete its work. Democrats and nonpartisan groups that support two anti-gerrymandering state constitutional amendments say they will oppose the plan. Democrats also have filed a lawsuit challenging another redistricting plan for Florida's congressional seats, although it has not yet been signed into law by Governor Rick Scott. Now here's Ronald J. Ebbin with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
Prison privatization is on the agenda for the full Senate that's scheduled to meet at 9 a.m.
The Senate Education Pre-K-12 Committee will be reviewing a multitude of bills, but include one that would require that each school district adopt a policy that provides high school students with the option of graduating early. Another bill would put cameras on school buses. The Rules Committee will be urging Congress to support a term limit amendment for members of Congress. The Rules Committee will also take up an amendment that would prevent future lawmakers from working for or contracting with a state university or college while in office or for 2 years after leaving office. And the Epilepsy Association of the Big Bend will hold a small event at the Plaza Level Rotunda at the Capitol from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. The activists will educate and bring awareness to epilepsy and head injuries. And that's the Day Book for Tuesday, February 14th.
Finally, an attempt to ban red light cameras in Florida went down to defeat in last year's lawmaking session. This year, Tom Flanagan reports, lawmakers in the Senate at least seem content to just pass a few more regulations.
This is a busy Florida traffic intersection. It's also an intersection that's equipped with red light cameras. At the moment, there are more than 70 jurisdictions in Florida using the cameras to catch red light runners. The cameras capture the image of an offending vehicle with the emphasis on the license plate. The person to whom the vehicle is registered then receives a $158 traffic ticket in the mail. Since the first cameras were installed a few years ago, they have been controversial. The Florida House voted to do away with them last year, but the measure didn't clear the Senate. This year, Senator Rene Garcia, Republican from Hialeah, is sponsoring his own red light camera bill. He brought it before the Senate Community Affairs Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senate Bill 590 seeks to remove the red light cameras from the state. Ha ha. No? You like that? No. It's a joke.
Which brought a nice try comment from Committee Chair Bill Bennett. So Senator Garcia explained his measure for real.
The main part of it is it standardizes the yellow lights at these red light camera intersections to make sure that we have uniformity across the state.
The Garcia bill even makes sure that dead people won't be troubled by traffic tickets if a live person borrows their car and then runs a red light.
That's one of the provisions that creates an additional defense that can be established for issuance of a red light camera when the registered owner of the vehicle is deceased.
And the bill also firms up some spongy language in the current law.
Current law dictates that no red on right violation may be issued when a turn is made without stopping, as long as it's done in a, quote, careful and prudent manner. The term careful and prudent manner is unclear, undefined, and it's interpreted in different various ways in cities and different counties, so we're trying to standardize.
Committee Chair Mike Bennett did have one question.
I know we're trying to standardize, and I happen to agree with that, but what about the cities who are moving to a smart grid to try to improve the flow of traffic by making the green last longer, the red last longer, whatever?
Garcia said traffic managers could tinker with the red and green timing all they wanted.
If you want to keep the green light longer, you can go ahead and do that. If you want to keep the red light longer, you absolutely can do that. It's just for that yellow light,
the yellow
transitioning
light
period.
The Garcia bill drew support from the City of Orlando and Florida League of Cities during Monday's meeting, and the bill was approved by the full Senate Community Affairs Committee. It has one more committee stop before hitting the floor. In the House, an almost identical bill has already made it through the committee process and had its first reading on the floor about a month ago. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.